east, I give up and shoot another text to Wade, who's also nowhere to be found. Where is he?
Game room.
I bypass the living room, heading for the huge den that doubles as a billiards room. Wade is at the pool table, chatting with one of our teammates. He catches my eye when he sees me and nods to the left. I follow his gaze. My brother is sprawled on the couch with a blonde in his lap. Her pale hair falls over her face like a curtain, so I can't tell who it is, but I can see that her lips are glued to East's. His hand is slowly tunneling underneath her skirt. She giggles, and I instantly freeze. I know that giggle. She lifts her head, and, yep, it's Abby.
East!
I boom from the doorway. He looks over, blue eyes glazed, cheeks flushed. He's drunk out of his mind. Awesome.
Look, Abs, it's my big bro,
he slurs.
Come on, time to go,
I order, reaching for him. Abby stares at me with wide, guilty eyes, but I'm more concerned about East. Some demon is riding him hard if he's decided to hook up with my ex.
What's the hurry? Abs and I are just getting started. Right, baby?
Her cheeks turn pinker.
Reed,
she starts. I ignore her.
Get up, I snap at my brother. We're leaving.
Not going anywhere.
Yeah, you are.
He doesn't move.
Just 'cause you're not getting any doesn't mean my dick should go unused, right, Abs?
Abby makes some small noise. Could be agreement, could be denial, hell if I care. I just want to get Easton home before he does something he's going to regret.
Your dick gets plenty of play.
Maybe I want more,
East grins.
And what do you care? We both know I can do her better.
Abby's face is bright red now.
Easton, she says tightly.
What? You know I'm right.
His mocking gaze shifts toward her.
You're wasting your time pining over him, babe.
Did he ever tell you he loved you?
No, right?
That's 'cause he didn't.
Abby makes a gasped, wounded sound.
Screw you, Easton. Screw both of you.
Then she rushes out of the den without a backward look. Easton watches her go, then turns to me and starts to laugh, cold and humorless.
Made another one run, huh, brother? Ella, Abby.
You're the one who ran her off.
I shake my head at him. Leave Abby alone. She's not one of your toys, East.
What, she's too good for a screw-up like me?
Yes. That's not what I'm saying, I lie.
Bullshit. You don't want me to taint your pure, sweet Abby. Don't want me to mess her up.
East moves forward, swaying on his feet. The wave of alcohol in his breath nearly knocks me over.
Goddamn hypocrite. You're the bad apple. You're the one who ruins chicks.
He comes even closer until our faces are inches apart. And then he dips his mouth toward my ear and hisses.
You ruined Ella.
I flinch. Everyone's eyes are on us. The Royals are in shambles, ladies and gentlemen. The twins have stopped talking to me. Seb must have said something to Sawyer, and now they both look at me as if I'm a leper. East trying to screw his pain away.
Kid's angry at the world. And me? I'm just drowning.
All right, I'm done here. I sidestep him, struggling to keep myself under control.
You do what you want, buddy.
Damn right I will,
he slurs. I catch Wade's eye and jerk my head toward the door. He wastes no time meeting me there.
Make sure East gets home all right, I mutter.
He can't drive.
Wade nods.
I'm on it.
Go home. It'll all be better in the morning.
If Ella shows up, yes. If not, we're screwed. Feeling defeated, I drive home and try not to think about how my life has gone to hell. Ella's gone. East's a mess. Brooke's back. I don't know what to do with the anger. I can't fight again. My ribs are too sore. But my hands are fine, so I duck downstairs to the weight room and take out my aggression on the punching bag. I pretend the bag is me. I pummel it until my hands are bloody and there are red marks on my feet and up and down my legs. It doesn't do a damn bit of good. Afterward, I wash off my sweat and blood in the shower, throw on a pair of sweats, and climb upstairs. In the kitchen, I dig out an energy drink and am startled to realize the time. It's past 1 a.m. I was down in the basement for almost an hour and a half. Exhausted, I haul my tired ass up the stairs. Maybe I can finally fucking sleep tonight. The hallway is dark and every door is closed, including East's. I wonder if he's back from the party. As I approach my door, I hear noises. Low grunts, gasps. What the hell? Brooke better not be in there. I throw open the door and the first thing I see is my brother's bare ass. He's on my bed. So is Abby, who's moaning softly as East pumps into her. Her hands clutch his shoulders, legs wrapped around his hips. Her hair is fanned out across my pillow. Seriously? I growl. Easton stops moving, but keeps one hand curled over my ex's breast. He glances over his shoulder and offers a savage smile. Oh, man, this is your room? He says mockingly. Must have gotten it mixed up with mine. Sorry, brother. I slam the door and stumble back into the hall. I sleep in Ella's room. Or more accurately, I lie on Ella's bed and brood all night. In the morning, I run into East in the kitchen. Abby tasted good last night. He smirks and takes a bite of an apple. Idly, I wonder how he'd feel if I took that apple and shoved the whole thing down his throat. He'd probably laugh and say he wanted another one just to show me. Show me what, though? That he hates my guts? Didn't realize we were sharing like the twins. I grab the pitcher of water with more force than I intend, and the filtered water spills over my hand. East forces a laugh out. Why not? Maybe if I was the one boning Ella, she wouldn't have left. Blood washes over my eyes. You touch her, and I'll... She's not even here for me to touch, you asshole. He hurls the half-bitten apple, and it explodes against the side of the cabinet just inches from my head. I wish that was a fucking brick and it smashed your head in. Yeah, we're doing really well here in the royal household. I avoid East for the rest of the day. Chapter 7. Another week passes. Ella's still gone and my brothers still aren't talking to me. Life sucks, and I have no idea how to make it better, so I stop trying. I just give in to the misery and shut out the world and spend every night wondering what Ella is doing, if she's safe, if she misses me. But of course she doesn't. If she missed me, she'd have come home already. On Monday, I get up and go to practice. It's obvious to everyone that East and I are feuding. He stands on one end of the sidelines and I stand on the other. The distance between us is larger than a stadium. Hell, the entire Atlantic could probably be dumped in the chasm that's growing between us. After practice, Val stops me in the hall. I check the urge to cut my balls. Just tell me she's okay, she begs. She's fine. Is she mad at me? Did I do something? Val's voice cracks. Damn it. Can't anyone keep their shit together? Irritation makes me snap. What am I, your couples therapist? I don't know why she's not calling you. Val's face crumples. That's a shitty thing to say, Reed. She's my friend, too. You have no right to keep her from me. If Ella wanted to hear from you, she'd call. That's the worst thing I could say, but the words fall out anyway. Before I can take them back, Val runs off. If Ella didn't hate me before, she will when she gets back and sees the mess I've made of everything. Pissed and frustrated, I turn and slam my foot into the locker. The metal door crumples under the impact and a corresponding jolt zips up my leg. It doesn't feel good. Down the hall, I hear laughter. I turn to see Easton holding out his hand. Dominic Brunfeld slaps something into East's palm. A few other guys from the team pull out bills and hand them over. Never thought I'd see you torn up over a chick, Dom says as he walks past me. You're letting us all down. I flip him off and wait for East to reach me. Want to explain what's going on? East fans his money in my face. Easiest cash I've ever earned. You're unhinged, bro. Everyone in school knows it. It was just a matter of time before you'd lose your cool. It's why Ella ran. I breathe heavily out of my nose. She's coming back. Oh, did you magically find her in the middle of the night? He spreads his arms out wide and twists around. Because she's not here. You see her? Dom? Do you see Ella? Dom shifts his gaze from me to East and back again. No, he doesn't see her. What about you, Wade? You see her? She joined you in the bathroom? Shut up, East. Pain shines in his eyes as he makes a zipping motion across his lips. Shutting up, Master Reed. You know what's best for the Royals, right? You do all the right things, get all the good grades, play ball smart, screw all the right girls. except when you don't. And when you fuck up, you affect us all. His hand wraps around the back of my neck and drags me forward until our heads are pressed together.
So why don't you shut up, Reed?
Ella's not coming back. She's dead, just like Mommy, dearest. Only this time, it's not my fault, it's yours. Shame swamps me, a murky, ugly substance that glues itself to my bones and weighs me down. I can't escape the truth. East is right. I helped kill Mom, and if Ella's dead, I helped kill her, too. I wrench myself away from his grasp and stalk back into the locker room. I've never fought in public with my brothers before. It's always been all for one, one for all. Mom hated when we fought at home, but didn't tolerate it when we were out. If we even so much as sniped at each other, she pretended we weren't hers. Maria Royal's boys don't ever embarrass her or themselves in public. One disapproving look from her had us straightening our clothes, throwing our arms around each other like it was opening day at the ballpark, and we were happy to be alive, despite being seconds away from thrashing each other within an inch of our lives. The door to the locker room creaks open. I don't look up to see who it is. I know it's not East. When he gets mad, he keeps to himself. On Friday, before the game, one of the Pastels took scissors to some freshman and cut off her hair. Chick ran out of school bawling her eyes out. I tense. Shit. That must have been the girl Delacorte and I saw streaking out of the building and into the VW. Blonde, skinny, drives a white Passat. He nods and the bench creaks as he takes a seat next to me. Days before that, Dev Khan torched June Chen's science project. Isn't June a scholarship student?
Yep.
Huh. I force myself to sit up. Any other pretty stories you want to tell?
Those are the two big ones. I've heard rumors about other shit, but haven't confirmed them. Jordan spit on some girl during health. Goody Bellingham is offering 50 grand to anyone who's willing to run train on the homecoming court.
I rub a tired hand over my jaw. This stupid school. It's barely been 2 weeks.
And in those 2 weeks, your brother stopped talking to you, you got into it with Delacorte, smashed a locker. Oh, and before Ella left, apparently you decided you didn't like the look of Scott Gastenberg and tried to rearrange his face.
He was talking smack. The guy insulted Ella. I didn't hear it, but I knew by the smug look on his face when we were at the club that he'd thought he'd gotten away with something.
Not on my watch.
Probably. Nothing that comes out of Gasty's mouth is ever worth listening to. You did us all a favor getting it wired shut, but the rest of the school is falling apart. You need to man up. I don't care what happens to Aster.
Maybe you don't, but without the Royals running things, the school's going to shit.
Wade shifts on the hard metal surface. People are talking about Ella, too.
Whatever, let them talk.
You say that now, but how's it going to be for her when she gets back? She's already gotten into a catfight with Jordan. I mean, yeah, it was hot as hell, but then there was the Daniel thing, and now she's disappeared. Everyone says she's off getting an abortion or recovering from an STD. If you're hiding her, now's the time to trot her out, make a show of force.
I remain silent.
Wade sighs.
I know you don't like being in charge, but guess what, dude? You are, and have been since Gid graduated. If you let things continue to slide, by the time Halloween comes, it'll be a horror show here. There'll be intestines and brain matter splattered on the school walls. Someone will have gone full-on carry on Jordan by then.
Jordan, that chick is nothing but trouble.
Why don't you take care of it?
I mutter.
Your family's got enough money to buy Jordans.
Wade comes from old money. I think some of it is still stored in gold bullion in their basement.
It's not money. It's the Royals. You make people listen. Probably because there are so many of you.
He's right. The Royals have ruled this school since Gid was a sophomore. I don't know what happened, but one day we woke up and everyone looked to Gid. If a kid stepped out of line, Gid was there to set him straight. The rules were simple. Pick on someone your own size. Size being a metaphorical thing. Size being social status, bank account, intelligence. Jordan going after one of the Pastels would have been fine. Jordan going after a scholarship student, not so good.
Ella had fallen into a gap. She wasn't a scholarship student, she wasn't a rich kid either, and I thought that she was sleeping with my dad, that he brought home a whore from a high-class brothel. He and Steve liked to frequent those places on business trips. Yeah, Dad's a real class act.
I'd stood back and waited, and everyone waited with me, except Jordan. Jordan immediately saw what I did, that Ella was made of something stronger than we'd seen before at Astor Park. Jordan hated it. I was drawn to it. I don't want that kind of control, Wade is saying. I just want to get laid, play a little football, annoy my mom's boyfriends, and get wasted. I can do all that stuff even if Jordan's terrorizing every pretty girl that breathes the wrong way. But you've got a conscience, man. But with all this shit, with Daniel still walking around the halls like he didn't try to rape Ella, well, silence is kind of considered approval. He gets to his feet. Everyone leans on you. It's a burden, I get it. But if you don't stand up, it's going to be a massacre. I get up too and head for the door. Let the school burn, I mutter. It's not my job to put out the flames. Bro. I pause in the doorframe. What? At least let me know which way things are going to go. I don't care. I just want to know if I need to start wearing a hazmat suit. Shrugging, I glance at him over my shoulder. Things can go to hell for all I care. I hear a sigh of defeat behind me, but I don't stick around for another second. As long as Ella's MIA, I refuse to concentrate on anything other than finding her. If everyone around me is miserable, then fine. We can all be miserable together. I keep my head down as I trudge down the hall. I almost make it all the way to class without talking to a single person, until a familiar voice calls out to me. What's the matter, Royal? You moping 'cause nobody wants to play with you? I stop walking. The barking laughter of Daniel Delacourt has me slowly swiveling to face him. Sorry, I didn't quite hear you, I say coldly. Want to repeat that? To my fist this time? He stumbles over his own feet, because the menace in my voice is unmistakable. The hallway is crowded with kids getting out of their after-class electives, music students, debate team, the cheer squad, the science club. I advance with purpose, adrenaline spiking in my veins. I got in one punch with this jerkwad before, but only one. My brothers dragged me away before I could do any more damage. Today, no one is stopping me. The pack of animals that makes up the student body of Astor Park smells the blood in the air. Delacourt shifts to the side, not fully facing me, but wary of having his back to me. I'm not the kind of guy to stab someone in the back, I want to tell him. That's your deal. But Delacourt thinks differently. He's screwed up in the head, preys on people he thinks are weaker than him. Anger radiates off his lean frame. He doesn't like to be confronted with his cowardice. Daddy gets him off, after all. That's fine, but Daddy's not here right now, is he? Is everything about violence for you, Royal? You think your fists can solve all your problems? I smirk. At least I don't use drugs to solve my problems. Chicks don't want you, so you drug 'em. That's your M.O., right? Ella wanted it. I don't like her name coming out of your mouth. I step forward. You should forget her name. Or what? Are we dueling to the death? He spreads his arms out in invitation for the audience to laugh with him, but either they hate him or they're afraid of me, because there's not so much as a titter in response. No, I think you're a waste of space. You're taking up oxygen that could be better spent coming out of someone's ass. I can't kill you, stupid legal reasons and all, but I can hurt you. I can make every waking moment of your life miserable, I say matter-of-factly. You should leave school, dude. No one wants you here. His breath comes in shallow pants. It's you no one wants, he jeers. He looks to the crowd again for support, but their bright-eyed interest is in potential bloodshed. They move closer, pushing Daniel forward. The coward inside of him snaps. He throws his phone at me, the plastic casing striking my forehead. The students gasp. Something warm and coppery trickles down, clouding my vision, coating my lips. I could punch him. That'd be easy. But I want him to really hurt. I want us both to hurt. So I grab him by the shoulders and slam my forehead against his. My blood paints his face, and I grin with satisfaction. Your face looks prettier already. Let's see what other magic I can make for you. Then I slap him, hard. He flushes with anger, more at the disdain in my touch than the actual pain. A slap is a girl's weapon, not a blow exchanged between guys. My open palm makes a smacking sound when I slap him again. Daniel backs away, but he can't get far from me. His retreat is halted by the lockers. Grinning, I step in and slap him again. He blocks me with his hand, leaving his entire left side open. I deliver two strikes to the left side of his face before backing away.
Hit me! He screams. Hit me! Use your fist!
My smile widens.
You don't deserve my fists. I use fists on a man.
I smack him again, and this time it's hard enough that his skin splits. Blood pools around the wound, but that doesn't satisfy my lust for revenge. I clap a hand against one ear and then the other. Weakly, he tries to defend himself. Daniel purses his lips, gathering up saliva. I faint to the left to avoid the stream of spittle that spills out. Disgusted, I grab his hair and shove his face into the locker. When Ella gets back, she's not going to want to see trash like you around, so either leave or start practicing your invisibility skills, because I don't want to see or hear from you again. I don't wait for an answer. I slam his forehead into the metal locker and let go. He tips over, 170 pounds of douchebag collapsing on the floor like a discarded toy. I turn to find Wade standing there behind me.
Thought she didn't care, he murmurs.
The grin I give him must be feral because everyone but Wade and his stoic shadow, Hunter, takes a step back. Leaning down, I swipe Daniel's phone off the floor, then roll him over and pick up his limp hand. I press the thumb against the home button and then key in my dad's number.
Callum Royal, he answers impatiently.
Hey, Dad, you're gonna need to come to school.
Reed, what number are you calling from? He demands.
Daniel Delacorte's phone, Judge Delacorte's son.
You should bring your checkbook. I beat him up pretty good.
He asked for it, though, literally, I say cheerfully.
I hang up and swipe a hand across my face as the blood from the cut drips down into my eye. Stepping over Daniel's body, I drawl,
Later, Wade, Hunter.
I give the big, silent lineman a nod. He returns the gesture with his own chin jerk, and I head outside to get some air. Dad is frothing at the mouth when he appears in the waiting area outside Headmaster Barringer's office. He doesn't comment on my bloody forehead. He just yanks me up by the lapels of my blazer and brings his face close to mine.
This needs to stop, he hisses.
I shrug out of his grasp.
Chill out. I haven't been in a fight in over a year, I remind him.
You want a medal for that? A pat on the back? Jesus, Reed, how many times do we have to go through this routine? How many goddamn checks do I need to write before you smarten up?
I look him square in the eye. Daniel Delacorte drugged Ella at a party and tried to rape her. Dad sucks in a sharp breath. Mr. Royal? We turn to see Barringer's secretary standing in the headmaster's open doorway.
Mr. Barringer will see you now, she says primly.
Dad stalks past me, tossing over his shoulder.
Stay here. I'll deal with this.
I try to hide my pleasure. I get to kick it out here while Dad cleans up my mess? Sweet. Not that I consider it a mess. Delacorte had it coming. He's deserved a beating since the night he tried to hurt Ella, but I got sidetracked from delivering retribution because I was too busy falling in love with her. I plant my ass back in the plush waiting room chair, studiously avoiding the disapproving frowns that Barringer's secretary keeps flashing my way. Dad's meeting with Barringer lasts less than 10 minutes. 7, if the clock over the door is accurate. When he strides out of the office, his eyes contain that triumphant gleam he usually has after he closes a lucrative business deal.
All taken care of, he tells me, then gestures for me to follow him. Go back to class, but make sure you come straight home after school. Your brothers, too. No unnecessary stops. I need all of you at home. I instantly tense up.
Why? What's going on?
I was going to wait until after school to tell you, but since I'm already here...
Dad pauses in the middle of the huge wood-paneled lobby.
The PI found Ella.
Before I can even begin to process that bombshell, my father stalks out the front entrance, leaving me staring after him in shock.
Chapter 8 Ella. The bus rolls into Bayview much, much too soon. I'm not ready. But I know I'll never be ready. Reed's betrayal lives inside of me now. It slinks through my veins like black tar, attacking what's left of my heart, like a fast-acting cancer. Reed broke me. He tricked me. He made me believe that something good could exist in this awful, screwed-up world, that someone could actually give a damn about me. I should have known better. I've spent my entire life in the gutter, frantically trying to crawl my way out of it. I loved my mother, but I wanted so much more than the life she gave us. I wanted more than seedy apartments and moldy leftovers and a desperate struggle to make ends meet. Callum Royal gave me what Mom couldn't. Money, an education, a fancy mansion to live in, a family, an illusion, a bitter voice mutters in my head. Yeah, I guess it was. And the sad thing is, Callum doesn't even know it. He doesn't even realize he's living in a house of lies. Or maybe he does. Maybe he's fully aware that his son is sleeping with... No, I refuse to think about what I saw in Reed's bedroom the night I skipped town. But the images are already bubbling to the surface of my mind. Reed and Brooke on his bed. Brooke, naked. Brooke, touching him. A gagging noise flies out of my mouth, causing the elderly woman across the aisle to glance over in concern. "Are you all right, sweetie?" she asks. I swallow the ball of nausea. "Fine," I say weakly. "I have a bit of a stomach ache." "Sit tight," the woman says with a reassuring smile. "They're opening the doors now. We'll be out of here in a jiffy." God, no. A jiffy is too soon. I don't ever want to get off this bus. I don't want the cash that Callum forced on me back in Nashville. I don't want to go back to the Royal Mansion and pretend that my heart hasn't been shattered into a million pieces. I don't want to see Reed or hear his apologies, if he even has any. He hadn't said a word when I walked in on him and his father's girlfriend. Not one word. For all I know, I'll walk through the door and discover that Reed is back to his old, cruel self. Maybe I'd prefer that, actually. And then I can forget I ever loved him. I stumble off the bus, holding my backpack strap tight to my shoulder. The sun has already set, but the station is all lit up. People bustle around me as the driver unloads everyone's luggage from the belly of the vehicle. I don't have any bags, only my backpack. The night I ran, I didn't take any of the fancy clothes Brooke had bought me, and now they're all waiting for me at the mansion. I wish I could burn every scrap of fabric. I don't want to wear those clothes or live in that house. Why couldn't Callum leave me alone? I could have started a new life in Nashville. I could have been happy, eventually anyway. Instead, I'm in royal clutches again, after Callum used every threat in the book to bring me back. I can't believe the lengths he went to in order to find me. Turns out the bills from the original 10 grand he gave me had sequential serial numbers. All he had to do was wait until I used one, and then he was able to pinpoint my location. I don't even want to know how many laws he broke to trace the serial number of a $100 bill in this country. But I guess men like Callum are above the law. A car honks, and I stiffen when a black town car pulls up to the curb. The one that followed the bus from Nashville to Bayview. The driver gets out. It's Durand, Callum's chauffeur slash bodyguard, who's as big as a mountain and just as forbidding.
"How was the ride?" he asks gruffly. "Are you hungry? Should we stop for food?"
Since Durand is never this chatty, I wonder if Callum ordered him to be extra nice to me. I received no such order, so I'm not at all nice as I mutter, "Get in the car and drive." His nostrils flare. I don't feel bad. I'm sick to death of these people. From this point on, they're my enemies. They're the prison guards, and I'm the inmate. They're not my friends or my family. They're nothing to me. It seems like every light in the mansion is on when Durand stops the car in the circular driveway. Since the house is pretty much a sprawling rectangle of nothing but windows, all that dazzling light is nearly blinding. The oak doors at the pillared entrance fly open, and Callum appears, his dark hair perfectly styled, his tailored suit clinging to his broad frame. I square my shoulders, prepared for another showdown, but my legal guardian smiles sadly and says, "Welcome back." There's nothing welcoming about it. This man tracked me all the way to Nashville and threatened me. His list of dire consequences if I didn't return seemed endless. He would have me arrested as a runaway. He would report me to the police for using my mother's identification. He would tell them I stole the 10 grand he gave me and have me charged with theft. None of those threats are what made me cave. No, it was his emphatic declaration that there was no place I could run, that he couldn't find me. Anywhere I went, he'd be there. He'd hunt me for the rest of my life, because, as he reminded me, he owed it to my father. My father, a man I never even met. A man who, from the sound of it, was a spoiled, selfish jerk who married a money-hungry shrew while neglecting to tell her, or anyone else for that matter, that he knocked up a young woman when he was on shore leave 18 years ago. I don't owe Steve O'Halloran a thing. I don't owe Callum Royal either. But I also don't want to be looking over my shoulder for the rest of my life. Callum doesn't bluff. He would never stop hunting me if I ran again. As I follow him into the mansion, I remind myself that I'm strong. I'm resilient. I can handle 2 years of living with the Royals. All I have to do is pretend they're not around. My focus will be on finishing high school, and then I'm off to college. Once I graduate, I'll never have to set foot in this house again. Upstairs, Callum shows me the new security system he installed on my bedroom door. It's a biometric hand scan, supposedly the kind of security he has at Atlantic Aviation. Only my handprint can grant access to the room, which means no more late-night visits from Reed, no more watching movies with Easton. This room is my cell, and that's exactly what I want. Ella. Callum sounds weary as he follows me into my room, which is as pink and girlish as I remember. Callum had consulted with a decorator, but picked everything out himself, proving that he knows absolutely nothing about teenage girls. "What?" I ask. "I know why you ran off, and I wanted..." "You know?" I cut in warily. Callum nods. "Reed told me." "He told you?" I can't contain or hide my surprise. Reed told his father about him and Brooke? And Callum didn't kick him out? Hell, Callum doesn't even look upset. Who are these people?
"I understand why you might have been too embarrassed to come to me yourself," Callum continues. "But I want you to know that you can always talk to me about anything. In fact, I think we should file a police report, first thing tomorrow morning."
Confusion washes over me. A police report?
"That boy needs to be punished for what he did, Ella."
That boy? What the heck is going on right now? Callum wants to have his son arrested for what? Underage sex? I'm still a virgin. Can I be prosecuted for... Jeez. I flush deep red. His next words shock me.
"I don't give a damn if his father is a judge. Delacorte can't get away with drugging and attempting to sexually assault a girl."
I suck in a breath. Oh, gosh. Reed told Callum what Daniel tried to do to me? Why? Or rather, why now, and not weeks ago when it happened? But whatever Reed's reasons were, I resent him for saying something. The last thing I want to do is get the cops involved, or to find myself caught up in a long, messy court case. I can imagine exactly what would go on in that courtroom. High school stripper alleges some rich white boy tried to drug her for sex. No one is believing that. I'm not filing a report, I say stiffly. Ella. It was no big deal, okay? Your sons found me before Daniel could do any real damage. Frustration floods my belly. And that's not why I ran off, Callum. I don't belong here, okay? I'm not cut out to be some rich princess who goes to prep school and drinks $1,000 glass of champagne at dinner. That's not me. I'm not fancy or wealthy or... But you are wealthy, he interrupts quietly. You're very, very wealthy, Ella, and you need to start accepting that. Your father left you a fortune, and one of these days we'll need to sit down with Steve's lawyers to decide what you're going to do with that money. Investments, trusts, that sort of thing. In fact, he pulls out a leather wallet and hands it to me. Your cash for the month, per our agreement, and a credit card. I suddenly feel lightheaded. The memory of Reed and Brooke together is the only thing I've been able to concentrate on since I left. I forgot all about the inheritance from Steve. We can discuss it another time, I mumble. He nods. Are you sure you won't reconsider telling the authorities about Delacorte? I won't reconsider, I say firmly. He looks resigned. All right. Would you like me to bring you up something to eat? I ate at the last rest stop. I want him gone, and he knows it. Okay, well, he edges to the door. Why don't you turn in early? I'm sure you're exhausted after that long bus ride. We can talk more tomorrow. Callum leaves, and I feel a pang of irritation when I notice he didn't shut the door all the way. I walk over to close it. At the same time, it flies open, nearly knocking me on my ass. The next thing I know, a pair of strong arms wrap tightly around me. At first I stiffen, because I think it's Reed. But when I realize it's Easton, I relax. He's as tall and muscular as Reed, with the same dark hair and blue eyes, but the scent of his shampoo is sweeter, and his aftershave isn't as spicy as Reed's. Easton, I start, then gasp, because the sound of my voice only tightens his grip. He doesn't say a word. He hugs me as if I'm a security blanket. It's a chest-crushing, desperate embrace that makes it hard to breathe. His chin lands on my shoulder and then burrows in my neck, and although I'm supposed to be mad at every royal in this mansion, I can't stop myself from stroking one hand through his hair. This is Easton, my self-proclaimed big brother, even though we're the same age. He's larger than life, incorrigible, often annoying, and always screwed up. He probably knew about Reed and Brooke. There's no way Reed kept that a secret from Easton. And yet, I can't bring myself to hate him. Not when he's trembling in my arms. Not when he sags backward and gazes at me with such overwhelming relief. It takes my breath away. And then I blink and he's gone, stumbling out of my room without a word. I feel a spark of concern. Where were the smart-ass remarks? Some cocky comment about how I came back because of his fine bod and animal magnetism? Frowning, I shut the door and force myself not to dwell on Easton's strange behavior. I'm not allowing myself to get caught up in any royal drama again, not if I want to survive my time here. I stick the wallet into my backpack, whip my sweatshirt off, and crawl into the bed. The silk coverlet feels like heaven against my bare arms. In Nashville, I was staying in a cheap motel with the scratchiest bedspread known to man. The thing was also covered with stains I never ever want to know the source of. I'd landed a job waiting tables at a diner when Callum showed up. Same way he'd shown up in Kirkwood and dragged me out of the strip club. I still can't decide if my life was better or worse before Callum Royal found me. My heart clenches as I picture Reed's face, Worse, I decide. So much worse. As if he knew that I was thinking about him, Reed speaks from behind my closed door.
Ella, let me in.
I ignore him. He knocks twice.
Please, I need to talk to you.
I roll over on my side with my back to the door. His voice is killing me. A growl comes from the other side of the door.
You really think this scanner is gonna keep me out, baby? You know better.
He pauses. When I don't answer, he goes on.
Fine.
I'll be back, grabbing a toolbox. The threat, which I know isn't an empty one, has me flying off the bed. I slap my hand on the security panel, and a loud beep fills the room as the lock clicks. I throw open the door and meet the eyes of the guy who was in the process of destroying me before I left. Thank God I put a stop to that. He's never getting close enough to have any impact on me again. I am not your baby, I hiss out. I am nothing to you, and you're nothing to me. You understand me? Don't call me baby. Don't call me anything. Stay the hell away from me. His blue eyes do a thorough examination of me from head to toe. Then he speaks in a gruff voice.
Are you okay?
My breathing is so short, it's a wonder I don't pass out. No oxygen is getting in. My lungs burn and my vision is red and hazy. Did he not listen to a word I just said?
You look thinner, he says flatly. You haven't been eating.
I move to close the door. He just shoves a palm against it and pushes it open, stepping inside, while I glare at him.
Get out, I snap. No.
His gaze continues to sweep over me as if he's checking me for injuries. He should be checking himself, because he's the one who looks like he got beat up. Literally. There's a purplish bruise peeking from the collar of his t-shirt. He's been in a fight recently. Or maybe several fights, judging by the slight grimace on his face when he draws a breath, as if his ribcage can't handle the act of breathing. Good. A vindictive part of me crows. He deserves to suffer.
Are you okay?
He repeats, his gaze never leaving mine.
Did anyone touch you? Hurt you?
Hysterical laughter bubbles out.
Yes! Someone hurt me! You hurt me!
Frustration clouds his face.
You left before I could explain.
There's no explanation you could give that would make me forgive you, I spit out. You screwed your father's girlfriend.
No,
he says firmly.
I didn't.
Bull.
It's true, I didn't.
He takes another breath.
Not that night. She was trying to convince me to talk to my dad on her behalf. I was trying to get rid of her.
I stare at him in disbelief. She didn't have any clothes on. I stop abruptly, my mind snagging on one particular thing he'd said.
Not that night?
Anger rises in my throat. Let's pretend for a second that I believe you didn't have sex with Brooke that night. I glare at him, which I don't, but let's pretend I do. You still slept with her some other time, didn't you? Guilt, deep and unmistakable. Flickers in his eyes. How many times? I demand. Reed runs a hand through his hair.
Two, maybe three.
My heart seizes. Oh my God. A part of me had expected a denial. But he's actually admitting to having sex with his dad's girlfriend more than once?
Maybe?
I screech.
I was drunk.
You're disgusting, I whisper. He doesn't even flinch.
I wasn't with her when you and I were together. The moment you and I hooked up for the first time, I was yours. Only yours.
Oh, lucky me. I got Brooke's sloppy seconds. Hooray. This time he does wince.
Ella,
shut up. I hold up my hand, so grossed out I can barely look at him.
I'm not even going to ask you why you did it, because I know exactly why you did it. Reed Royal hates his daddy. Reed Royal decides to get back at his daddy. Reed Royal has sex with his daddy's girlfriend. I gag. Do you realize how messed up that is?
Yeah, I do.
His voice is hoarse. But I never claimed to be a saint. I made a lot of mistakes before I met you. Reed, I meet his gaze head on. I will never forgive you for this. A flash of determination lights his eyes.
You don't mean that.
I step toward the door. Nothing you say or do will make me forget what I saw in your bedroom that night. Just be happy I'm keeping my mouth shut about it, because if Callum finds out, he'll lose his shit.
I don't care about my dad.
Reed advances on me.
You left me,
he growls. My jaw drops. You're mad at me for leaving? Of course I left. Why would I spend another second in this awful house after what you did? He moves even closer, his big frame invading my personal space, his hand coming out to cup my chin. I shrink from his touch, and that makes his eyes blaze hotter.
I missed you every second you were gone. I thought about you every goddamn second. You want to hate me for what I did? Don't bother. I was hating myself for it long before you showed up. I slept with Brooke, and that's something I've got to live with.
His fingers tremble against my jaw, but I didn't screw her that night. And I'm not letting you throw away what you and I have just because... What we have? We have nothing. I feel sick again. I'm done with this conversation. Get out of my room, Reed. I can't even look at you right now. When he doesn't budge, I plant both hands against his torso and shove him hard. And I keep shoving, keep slapping at his muscular chest until I move him inch by inch to the doorway. The slight smirk on his face only heightens my anger. Does he find this funny? Is everything a game to this guy? Get out, I order. I'm done with you. He stares at my hands, which are still pressed up against him, then at my face, which I'm pretty sure is redder than a tomato.
Sure, I'll go if that's what you want.
He cocks one eyebrow.
But we're not done, Ella. Not by a long shot.
I barely wait until he stepped past the threshold before I slam the door in his face. Chapter 9. The first thing I see when I wake up is the fan over my bed. The smooth, heavy cotton sheets remind me I'm no longer in that shitty $40-a-night hotel room anymore, but back in the royal palace. Everything is the same here. I even smell reed on the pillowcases, like he slept in here every night while I was gone. I throw the pillow on the floor and make a mental note to buy some new sheets. Did I make the right decision coming back? Did I have a choice? Callum proved he could run me down anywhere. I made what demands I could. The hand scan security lock on my bedroom door, a credit card in my name, a promise that once I was done with high school, the scrutiny would be lifted. The question I should be asking myself is whether I'm going to let one guy ruin my life. Am I so weak that I can't handle Reed Royal? I've been in charge for years. First taking care of my mom and then myself. The hole in my heart left by mom's death eventually healed over. The hole that Reed put there will heal too. Right. Rolling over, I spot the phone that Callum gave me lying on the nightstand. I left it behind, along with the car, the clothes, and everything else I'd been gifted. But separating myself from the royals, specifically Reed, didn't mean I stopped thinking about him. I couldn't leave that behind, and those memories haunted me every mile I traveled. I grab the phone with purpose and force myself to face the mess I left behind. Seeing all the messages is bittersweet. Every other time I've picked up and left, no one has missed me. Mom and I never stayed in any one place for longer than a couple of years. This time, I have more than 30 messages from Valerie, along with several from Reed. I delete those without reading them. There are a few from Easton, but I suspect those are also from Reed, so I delete them too. The other messages are from my boss, Lucy, the owner of the French Twist, a bakery close to Astor Park Prep. Those start out with concern and end with impatience. But it's Val's messages that bring an uncomfortable knot to my stomach. I should have said something to her. I thought about it a lot while I was gone, but I was afraid. Not just that the Royals might weasel information out of her, but also because she was a link to something I wanted to forget. I feel bad about how I treated her, though. If she up and disappeared, I'd be pissed. I'm sorry. I'm the shittiest friend ever. Do you still want to talk to me? I set the phone down and stare at the ceiling. To my surprise, the phone rings immediately. Val's picture pops up. I take a deep breath and answer it. Hey, Val. Where have you been? She shrieks. I've called and called. I open my mouth to feed her the illness excuse, but her next words stop me. And don't tell me that you were sick, because no one is sick for 2 weeks and can't even make a phone call. Well, unless she's patient zero at the beginning of a zombie apocalypse. As I listen to her concerned words, I realize that this is a test of our friendship. Even after I seemingly ducked her calls for 2 weeks, she's still accepting me back into her life. Yeah, she's asking questions, but ones she deserves an answer to. She's important. Important enough for an honest answer, no matter how embarrassing it is. I ran away, I confess. Oh, Ella, no, she sighs sadly. What did those royals do to you? I don't want to lie to her. I'm not ready to talk about it, but I might have overreacted. Why didn't you come to me? She asks, the hurt clear in every word. I didn't think of it. Something happened here, and I got in my car, bought a bus ticket, and left. The only thing in my mind was getting as far away from here as possible. It didn't occur to me to come to you. I'm not used to relying on people. I'm sorry. She's silent for a moment. I'm still pissed at you. You should be. Are you coming to school today? No. I got back late last night, so Callum's giving me a day to get settled. Fine. Then I'm skipping school and you're coming over and telling me everything. I'll tell you what I can. I don't even want to think about the Brooke and Reed stuff anymore. I want to forget it happened. I want to forget that I opened my heart to Reed. I got shit to tell you, too, she admits. When can you come over? I check the clock. An hour? I need to shower, eat, get dressed. Sounds like a plan. Come to the back door. Otherwise, my aunt will wonder why we aren't at school. Val lives with her aunt, so she can attend Astor Park. I've only met Val's evil cousin, Jordan, and I guess the day that I play hooky isn't the best time to introduce myself to the rest of her family. Roger, see you soon. I take a deep breath and call Lucy next. Hey, Lucy, it's Ella. I'm so sorry I disappeared on you like that. Can I come in this afternoon? I'm sorry, too, but I can't talk right now. It's busy. Lucy is curt, and I suddenly regret not going in the moment I woke up this morning. If you can stop by before 2 today, I can chat. I'll be there, I promise.
I have a feeling I'm not going to like what she has to say. I drag myself out of bed, shower, and then throw on a pair of old jeans and my flannel shirt. Ironically, this is essentially the same outfit I wore the first time I arrived at the royal mansion. My closet here is stuffed full of expensive clothes, but I'm not wearing a single stitch that was picked out by Brooke Davidson. That might be petty and stupid, but I don't care. I open my door and stop. Reed is leaning against the wall, opposite my bedroom. Morning. I slam the door shut. His strong voice easily carries beyond the door.
How long are you going to ignore me?
2 years, no, for as long as humanly possible.
I'm not leaving, he adds. And eventually you're gonna forgive me, so you might as well hear me out.
I walk over to the window beside my bed and look down. The drop from the second story to the ground is pretty steep, and I'm not sure the whole knotted sheet thing works in real life. With my luck, the sheets would come untied, and I'd crash to the ground, breaking several bones, and be stuck in my bed for weeks. I cross the room, throw open the door, and march past him without a word.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you about the Brooke thing.
You can take your sorries and choke on them. Halfway down the stairs, he catches me by my upper arm and tugs me around to face him.
I know you still care, or you wouldn't be giving me the silent treatment.
He even has the nerve to flash me a smile. Oh my God, he is not allowed to smile. First, because he's insanely hot when he does that, and second, because I'm mad at him. I give him a cold look and jerk out of his grasp. I've decided that I'm not going to waste my time or energy on people who don't deserve it. Reed waits until I'm down the steps, before calling after me.
So you don't care about Easton, then?
His mention of Easton has me turning back, because other than Val, Easton became one of my closest friends here. Is there something going on with him? Reed descends the rest of the stairs to stand next to me.
Yeah, you ran off. And he's had his whole life full of women he loves abandoning him.
The guilt makes me flush hot. I didn't abandon him. I left your cheating ass behind.
Reed shrugs. Then you'll need to convince him of that, not me. But I'm confident you'll win him over.
What an arrogant ass. I school my features into as sweet of an expression as I can manage. Will you do me a favor?
Of course.
Take your condescension, your unwanted advice, your creepy lurking outside of my door, and shove it up your ass. I whirl around. There's no grand exit for me, though, because Reed merely follows me into the kitchen, where I find the rest of the royal household, sans Gideon. Doesn't anyone have practice this morning? I ask warily. Easton and Reed play football. Those two should be at school by now. Callum's usually gone to his office before dawn breaks. I have no idea when the twins roll out of bed. This morning, everyone is sitting at the large glass-topped table that's situated in a nook that overlooks the pool and then the Atlantic Ocean beyond.
Special day, Callum says over the top of his coffee mug. Everyone is participating in this family get-together. Sandra prepared breakfast for you. It's in the refrigerator. Why don't you grab it and sit down?
Reed, stop hovering and take a seat.
It's not a suggestion for either of us. And despite Callum not being my dad, and despite Reed's tendency to not listen to him, we both do as Callum says.
It's good to have you back,
Sawyer says as I take my seat. At least, I think it's Sawyer. The burn mark around his wrist that I once used to identify the twins has healed over, so I'm not positive.
Yeah, it's getting cold, and Reed promised you'd take us all shopping for winter clothes,
Seb chimes in. Oh, he did he?
Yeah, we're pretty helpless without you.
Reed's low voice strikes me hard in the gut.
Don't talk to me,
I snap.
I agree, Easton says. Don't talk to her.
I jolt up in surprise to see all three roll.